Hello and welcome to Burst of All live on CamFM. I'm Michael Quintario.
I'm Chris Moten.
And joining us today as our guest is Dr. Rich Wareham.
Hello, yes. Doctor is my Christian name.
and we're in a show about the more unusual news stories from normally the past week, but we've cast our net ever so slightly wider, this being our first show of the new term.
Hey. So, woohoo!
Yeah, welcome.
Yes, welcome back to sunny Cambridge on this lovely, lovely day.
Yeah. Right. Another new thing, as well as a new term, is that we've got a webcam. So if you're listening online, we'll just wave at you and hope that one of the frames that actually gets picked up by the webcam is actually one in which we're waving.
If you want is a photo of the back of three mid-20s guys hunched over a desk, this could be your lucky day.
And also, you can talk to us via the website, as someone already has. They said that we can see you,
which is slightly worrying.
It is slightly worrying, yes.
Not
yes.
Why
Thank you, Anonymous. That was very nice of you.
Getting to the actual point of the show, it's news.
Yes, I forgot.
Remember the point of the show, Michael.
Make up a show. Quick, make up a show.
Quick, let's find some scraps of paper
jazz
lying around.
There's
going to be some fun.
Improvised by Rich. Whilst Michael and I deliver a critical commentary.
There's going to be some fun.
Improvised by Rich. Whilst Michael and I deliver a critical commentary.
At the same time. That'll work well on radio.
We'll just split the channels.
Exactly.
You can choose whether to listen left ear or right ear on your stereo headphones.
Or none of the ears, which is probably what's going to happen if there's going to be jazz fusion improvised by me and commented on by you two.
Well, no, we have actually got news stories, and we're going to start with theft from the Ministry of Defence.
Can you believe it? Now, the Ministry of Defence, almost by its very name, should be defence from stealing, along with other things. In fact, it should be the Ministry of Defending from everything, but not just threats of theft, but all manner of threats to the country. But this particular time, there has been a theft from the MOD, haven't there?
Yeah. There's a list that was revealed in response to a question in Parliament as to things that have gone missing. We've had guns go missing, which is concerning, obviously. Army ration packs, which is slightly odd, because have you ever actually tried an army ration pack? I have, and
I haven't. I imagine they would be nutritious, but awful.
Just as a slight question, what legitimate channel did you receive this army ration pack through?
I can't remember now.
Oh, you can't remember. Was it a legitimate channel that happened to call off the back of a lorry?
No. You can actually go and buy. There are some places that will actually sell you army ration packs. They're like the army and navy stores and
just
stuff.
Just in case you're starting a militia.
Exactly, yes.
But, I'm unsure whether why they wanted those, unless they wanted to get hold of those Yorkies that specifically say it's not for civvies on it.
Oh, you mean one of the many sort of exciting branded MOD only products that there are? Yes. Yeah. I also noticed that 34 laptops and 42 BlackBerries have gone missing, which is quite disturbing, although presumably the primary source for the second place will be the Ribena factory down the road.
But no, the one that really got me is that one of the items which was stolen was a bridge.
A bridge.
What kind of bridge? What river did it used to bridge? And what are the local community doing now?
It doesn't. I've not been able to find this out. I just found out that a bridge was stolen. It's one of those things where
I'd like to think it was like a Wile E. Coyote film. But at some point they were driving along, and one of the guys said, "Hey, Steve, look down. There's no bridge." And then the entire army looked surprised and then fell down as a little gust of cloud.
I had a tank in my mental image there trying to go over this bridge
and getting
humorously wedged in between the ever-narrowing sides of the ravine.
Absolutely, that's exactly how it works. I've seen these cartoons before, and that's how it goes.
But so this actually sounds like not too bad a list of things pinched from the MOD. I mean, I was expecting you to go like, okay, yeah, some sandwiches, that DVD of The Office Season 3 that Dave never gave me back. Oh, and also the HMS Ark Royal. But it seems the HMS Ark Royal is where it was, and that's good.
And it seems that the majority of bridges in the country are where they expect them to be, apart from this one. And what I do like is it said the list only includes items stolen from inside the UK. So quite how much sort of outside UK MOD stealing there is. Whether in the middle of Iraq, then there are some Iraqis in there nicking the odd Russian packet,
and multiple bridges.
Multiple bridges. Perhaps that's the main problem with the mission in Iraq. There's just no bridges anymore.
And like you put all one the down.
And all the trousers, yes. Yeah. That's what they're worried about.
That's
losing their trousers in a humorous fashion.
The main problem with the British mission in Iraq is the absence of trousers. We've been unable to do any sort of duty. We can't command any sort of respect. You know, I mean, you try...
Try winning hearts and minds when you've got your trousers down around your ankles and being stolen by a native.
You just can't oppress properly without trousers.
Exactly. Well, the Americans have got it all there with their sort of all-in-one bodysuit affair things going on. They're a lot harder to steal because then effectively you have naked soldiers and they tend to notice.
And that would actually be quite scary again. So if you're only missing your trousers, silly. If you're wearing nothing at all, terrifying.
The Scottish approach, we should just go to Iraq, paint ourselves blue and moon the enemy. Hope that'll scare them into submission.
Yeah.
taking the subject of bridges, there's one man who possibly could have used a bridge because he managed to survive. This is a crucial thing. It wouldn't be a news story that we'd actually go near if the man hadn't survived. He drove off the edge of the Grand Canyon.
Wow, that's a sat-nav gone wrong right there.
Really? I mean...
Really. I mean, don't go really. That's not a sat-nav gone wrong. That's just like an optimal route. It's not like he was avoiding traffic and it didn't avoid traffic successfully. He drove off the side of a Grand Canyon. Why did he drive off the side of the Grand Canyon? Presumably it wasn't a sat-nav error.
This is a lacking detail in all the news stories that I've found.
Lazy journalists are we dealing with? He went, oh, he drove into the Grand Canyon. Well, that happens.
Yeah,
give that two lines.
Although it was apparently an accidental crash, like rather than the guy deliberately driving into the Grand Canyon.
Like that bit at the end of Thelma and Louise. Or am I the only fan of feminist film here? I probably am, aren't I?
I was just wondering, how can you do that by accident? I mean, it's not... Do you just suddenly forget that you're in the region of a great big, effectively, hole?
Well, I've backed into a car by accident.
It's not quite on the same level.
Well, it's not as if I forgot I was in the middle of a car park. Sometimes your mind wanders. And perhaps there was a particularly interesting bird, say, or a rather surprised rabbit. And your attention wanders for a second. You're just backing up, and I was going to pull out this parking space. Oh, look, there's a bird. Isn't that a funny bird? I was like, oh!
Or you got one of those cars where they have a radar thing on the back. So you're used to when it's reversing that it goes sort of, bip, beep, 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 beep.
But it doesn't
but
pick
in
up.
In this case, there is the biggest empty space on the planet.
In this case, it was sort of beep, ping, beep. Ping, and you think, that's brilliant. I've got literally miles behind
the back, the back of the car park is about 2,000 feet down. Luxurious.
I can probably reverse full speed in reverse there. No problem at all. I do like the fact that it said that the car was found, was it about 200 feet down, balanced on a tree, which is even more like a Wile E. Coyote thing. Yeah. I like to think that possibly he was backing, driving, and again, looked out the window and thought, oh, God, I backed off the Grand Canyon. Then land on the tree. In a sort of very wonderful cartoony way. I do like the fact he survived. I mean, that's quite impressive. But then, if he survived, why do we not know why he drove off? I mean, I can understand if he didn't survive and you find the wreckage of a car and you go, this guy just drove off the cliff. But, I mean, he's there. I mean, presumably you can say, and what made you, sir, decide to drive off the side of the Grand Canyon? And if he had said there was a surprising rabbit, you can forgive him. But you just want to know the reason.
One of life's great mysteries.
It is one of life's great mysteries. Yeah, it's like Marie Celeste, that guy that drove off the side of the Grand Canyon. That's the order of great mysteries. The pyramids are like eight.
I'm intrigued as to what the rest of your list are now.
Oh, you always say this when I have a list, but then I don't want to ever reveal it because then I might discover some more. There's some holes in the list as well. Yeah. If more mysteries come in, I need to have somewhere to slot them.
Number three is the mysterious talent for jazz fusion.
It is. Number four is an empty spot. That's reserved when aliens come.
Is number four the mystery, like, why is there no actual entry for number four? It's kind of like a recursive mystery.
Oh, a recursive mystery. That's quite exciting.
You can't think about it or you'll go insane.
Number five is why is Jordan famous?
It's like it has a super injunction on it. That's a mystery. Number four, you can't even
talk about the mystery.
I should point out that the way that super injunctions work is not that if you say, hey, I hear that Daniel Craig slept around a bit, your brain explodes. if they did, that would be one hell of an injunction. I would take one of those out pretty much for kicks.
Disclaimer, ChemFM is not suggesting that Daniel Craig sleeps around a lot.
But I like the idea that there's some people deep in some bunker somewhere, probably not
Daniel
too
Craig
dissimilar.
Is sleeping around a lot.
Probably not. No! Probably not too dissimilar to this bunker. There are some shady scientists working on finding a way to create injunctions so that when you start talking about something, your head explodes.
That would be very shady scientists. Presumably those shady scientists are hoping that they can then go and sleep around a lot with complete impunity.
Hang on a minute. This is actually going to be a relevant topic of conversation. I think someone's taken the super injunction out of my vocabulary. But Harry Potter. There we go. I'll get it out. Voldemort in Harry Potter can track people when they say his name and go and kill them.
Oh, right.
So it's like he's got his own super injunction out.
So in this case, he'd just follow the trail of exploded heads.
Although, why didn't they just take this opportunity to just give him a new stupid name? Why didn't they call him Lord Wobblybottom? Yeah, he who can't be named, that's still quite mysterious and exciting, okay? I mean, if you want to properly destroy him, go call him Lord Wobblybottom. He can't trace you, can't do anything about it. No longer quite as scary, is he? And to be honest, if I had the choice between calling someone Lord Voldemort and Lord Wobblybottom, I'd probably call them Lord Wobblybottom just for the lols. So there, that's the entirety of Harry Potter solved.
That is actually, you'd never get considered for the Booker Prize, though.
Lord Wobblybottom?
They just search for the phrase Wobblybottom. Anytime that turns up, you're just removed from the list.
That's a triaging step, is it? It's one of the many forbidden words for the Booker Prize. Wobblybottom, no, verboten.
Yeah, exactly.
Thingamajig, that one's gone as well.
Yeah.
What do you call it?
Yes, all of anything which is actually quite nice and onomatopoeic.
I think you've misunderstood the category here, Michael, because, I mean, you know, item one was Wobblybottom, and that does not follow to thingamajig. Wobblybottom is not a word for, oh, I can't think of that thing, oh, that Wobblybottom. You know, that's not a thing that any human has ever said.
That's true, because you wouldn't be, like, ordering a drink at the bar and going, I'll have one of those Wobblybottoms, please. Yeah. Although, you might end up with an exciting...
escapade behind the pub.
Now, I believe that we're being prodded into going back to the point, not unusually by anyone in the studio, but by someone listening who proudly proclaimed that we are entering Segway o'clock, which is true, we are.
I assume that was just because I couldn't find the right word. I assume Segway was what they thought I was looking for.
That this was an appropriate segue. Yes, that would have been an appropriate word, wouldn't it? Yes, well done, listener. Thank you for providing and filling in our woefully lacking vocabulary. Do we have another story, possibly? Since I think we've probably exhausted the Grand Canyon.
I think it's time to throw it open to the floor and give them a chance to respond while we listen to a bit of music and get our thoughts in order.
So they can tell us if they've driven into anything amusing.
Yes. See if they can come up with any theories as to why someone might end up backing. It doesn't even say whether he's backing or going
forward.
Yeah,
true. Why would you? I mean, backing is one thing. Why would you go forward into the Grand Canyon? Yeah. So if you know, how can they tell us?
You can get in touch with us by email, studio@camfm.co.uk.
Or by going to the website, www.camfm.co.uk.
And clicking on the web on there. And you can also phone us, and we might be able to cope with that.
May or may not be able to cope with the concept of vocal communication.
You can phone us on 01223 850 247. That's 01223 850 247, and we'll be back after this short musical interlude.
On air and online
for students across Cambridge,
your station,
your Cam FM.
Welcome back to First of All on Cam FM. That was Just Can't Get Enough by the Black Eyed Peas, and we're moving on now to our travel section. But before that, we've had one email in from a listener who helpfully tells us that they've driven into a couple of hedges due to being bad at driving, which isn't quite on the level of the Grand Canyon. But are they suggesting that the guy was just really, really bad at driving?
It depends what a couple of hedges were. Perhaps it's a couple of hedges at the Newmarket Racecourse. That would be quite bad, right?
Also, Michael, that is really bad driving. I mean, it's almost definitively the worst driving you can do ever. Well, is that which ends up with your car at the bottom of the Grand Canyon and you with a surprised look on your face. That's an instant major fault. Personally, I was hoping that during the break we might manage to complete the set of geological features, that we might get somebody saying, I drove into a mountain, maybe somebody else going, like, I drove into some strata.
A lake.
An oxbow lake.
Perfect. Yeah. So it's
we've got a hedge. I don't know if a hedge is a geological feature.
I never learned about hedges in geography.
Well, on an OS map, there can be a solid line that's a hedge, so I think that
there
counts.
Can be a solid line that's a road. I mean, I've driven onto lots of roads.
No, like a solid line, like a wall boundary.
No, like Hadrian's Wall. Driving into Hadrian's Wall, that'd be good. Like backing in to Hadrian's Wall, knocking down a section. And that's something that's actually going to remain forevermore, your scar on the landscape.
But moving on, we have got, appropriately enough, a section of travel stories.
Travel stories, yes.
Starting with aerial travel. Apparently, Hong Kong Airlines has been training its cabin crew to Wing Chun Kung Fu.
So now, I don't believe that there's actually a martial art designed for use on an aeroplane, but its first part of its word is wing. Wing Chun.
Wing Chun is a real kung fu.
I'm sure it is, but how convenient that it happens to have the word wing in there as well for air use. I mean, that's quite convenient, isn't it? You can't mean.
Are you suggesting that's why they chose it, or... You're just boggled by the unlikelihood that such a coincidence will happen somewhere in the universe.
I'm just boggled by coincidence in general. And what I do like is the reason they decided to do this. So apparently, according to the airline, there was a female flight attendant who had to subdue a male passenger, and failing to think of anything else, she decided to take her knowledge of Wing Chun that she just happened to have, and that subdue the passenger, and so the airline thinking about running it out. I like the fact that the spokeswoman for the airline came up with the following wonderful quote. Normally, female cabin crew can't handle a fat guy, especially if they're drunk. Now, I'd like to think about the wisdom of that quote right there.
No, failing to see any ancient wisdom in that quote.
But you know, it came...
I failed to see anything about it that I can say on the radio.
No.
I would find... Hang on a moment. No, my brain just failed. I had a thing to say. Now I don't. Here is a moment of music. Dun, 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 bum.
There are three exciting ways in which the martial art could be used, according to Mark Phillips, director of the London Wing Chun Academy.
I like the fact that the first one is basically just link your arm with theirs, which is just kind of like less a martial art, more going for a promenade.
Or an impromptu auld lang syne. You know, we've got some people being a bit rowdy on aeroplane and say, well, by the way, ladies and gentlemen, due to the vagarity of the international dateline and time zones, it's now New Year! Come on, everyone! And by the time they finish doing this and have a few drinks, they've forgotten that they need to be subdued. Now, the next one, number two, is, and I quote verbatim from the article, the part two is, next, split the assailant's arms.
Well,
now, doesn't that sound a little bit like a somewhat harsh thing to do?
Yeah, you see those arms you used to have? Well, now they're in half.
Exactly. Well, you are now four arms, so you're like General Grievous from the Star Wars films, which is quite exciting.
So yeah. I think it's interesting that the airline have made a press release out of this. I mean, that would indicate that they're essentially putting this out as a sales pitch. In which case, that sales pitch is, Hong Kong Airlines, our cabin crew can kick your ass.
Exactly.
The potential for violence against my own person is not something I'm really shopping for.
The number three is nice as well. The flight attendant now traps the assailant's arms, having previously split them, of course, leaving his right arm free to land a restraining punch.
There's no such thing as a restraining punch. You're either restraining someone or you're punching them. The two are quite distinct things.
What if you hold onto somebody's tie with your right hand and then punch him in the face with your left?
Yeah, but
that's not really restraining, is it?
Isn't that a restraining punch?
No, that's restraining them and punching them. It's not a restraining punch. You can't just perform two actions at the same time and therefore meld them into one action.
Unless the punches are small and like perfect form, so that any movement of the arm this end tries to make is immediately blocked by a small punch, which is exactly the opposite force. And this, in a whirl of exciting punches, the assailant's arm appears to be utterly subdued. Now, we've had another wonderful comment off the website asking why it is the female flight attendant was drunk. I imagine it's probably because she had to use some sort of strange martial art to subdue a fat guy, to quote from Ava Chun, spokeswoman for the airline.
I thought it's the fat guy who's drunk in this scenario. I'm not sure where the drunken female cabin crew has come from.
It's because of the ambiguity of saying especially when they're drunk.
I think it might be one of those comical misunderstanding things.
Yes.
Quick, let's travel back in time 20 seconds so that we can retain the comical misunderstanding.
Now, I listen to this show quite a lot, especially when I'm not on it, and quite often, Chris says, you know, that would have been really funny. Let's rewind 20 seconds in time so that we may pretend to be really amusing. Now, I think that you should come out with a separate podcast for this, rather than the usual podcast feed for this show, Michael. You should come out with a separate one where you actually take all of Chris's suggestions and actually take them, so you end up with a non-temporal but twice as funny show about the bubble. But then wouldn't that be awful? And possibly a third podcast which consists of just Chris's comments that we should go back in time 3 seconds.
We could have like a back in time montage.
It'd be brilliant. Yes,
just a montage of me going Jesus Christ,
that would have been so good if
and we could fit it to a disco beat.
I could auto-tune it like Symphony of Science.
Auto-tune Chris's grumblings.
Well, I would listen to that album. I don't know if anyone else would. Auto-tune grumblings.
So do you have any suggestions like this, and you're listening on the podcast or on the listen again on the website, or you just think of something after the show, you can still get in touch with us by going to the CamFM website, www.camfm.co.uk, clicking on shows, clicking on Burst a Bubble, and then there's a little form cunningly tucked away on the right hand side of the webpage which will allow you to email us even when the show is not on.
Good grief, it's like emailing us from forward or backwards in time.
Or just send us a Facebook message, because odds on you know one of us.
And also there's a Burst a Bubble Facebook group.
Although only 2/3 of this studio are on Facebook, I hasten to point out. Yes. Me with my privacy.
Anytime I host a party now, I have to give a Facebook invite and a special rich invite.
Well, next time you have a party, I hope I get an invite.
I hope that makes you feel special.
It does make me special, yeah.
Speaking of privacy, people losing passports is our next travel-related story. And apparently thousands of UK passports are believed to have been thrown out in the rubbish, which sounds like the worst data protection ever.
Yes, yeah, well, and in a related story, thousands of tons of rubbish were mailed to people's homes securely, so there we are.
Also, that's not the worst data protection ever, because the worst data protection ever would be thousands of UK passports have been projected on the clouds like the bat signal. That would be the absolute worst, but I'd struggle to obtain the right set of circumstances.
And then further, accidentally, these signals have been photographed and then accidentally emailed to everyone on the internet.
Yeah.
Using everyone@internet.com. I shouldn't have given that email address away, should I?
If I knew of the ability to do that, I would probably put my own passport on it. Because, yes, it's a privacy violation, but I also get to be the bat signal.
that's a hard question, isn't it? Yeah. Particularly if you were like Prince and you change your name to just the bat signal.
The signal formerly known as Bat.
Well, exactly, yes. That would be a brilliant name to have. And imagine signing your name, just like, oh, sir, yeah, that's my name.
just drawing the Bat signal.
Exactly. Yeah.
Can you imagine trying to get a check accepted with that?
I think you'd be able to get a check accepted.
I think you could. I read a story.
But surely Bruce Wayne's credit is good.
I read a story on the internet, which is therefore false, about somebody who tried to sign for all of his credit card dealings using something which was not his signature, and was in fact a crude sketch of a certain organ. And he got away with this for a couple of months before being called up in a branch of Walmart. This is in America, I think, and there was a fun exchange between the cashier. Not quite sure what you should say in those circumstances, and the guy just sort of standing there going, "Yep, it's my signature. What of it?"
Sorry, my brain just passed fun exchange as like they exchanged fun.
What I like at the bottom of this article is actually a set of lists. So this obviously the passport office losing passports is bad, but also people lose passports on their own without any help from the passport office.
The story isn't about the passport office losing passports, it's about people just accidentally chucking them in the bin.
Oh, I thought it was actually about the passport office.
The UK passport office.
Oh, so when it said thousands of passports are thrown out by his rubbish, they didn't actually mean the passport service threw out a load of bags which happened to contain passports.
Ah.
Oh, right. Well,
this is another one of these comic misunderstandings.
It is, you know, that happened live. There you are. So what we should do now, using Chris's theorem of great radio, is to go back in time 2 minutes and me to say, do you know what that sounds like? That sounds like the passport office lost all the passports. But anyway, reasons that people lost their passports, there's some good ones here. I particularly like the last seen in a pocket of a coat which was donated to a tramp.
My favourite one, I think, is passport stored in safe in Turkish villa, thief stole safe.
I know, it's great. I like the one that was set on fire with clothes. So, first of all, why did you burn your passport? Second of all, why did you burn your clothing? I assume they were already wearing it, you know. That's just in my mind. They set themselves on fire, and after having survived being set on fire, they go, oh, God, but my passport was in there. Talking about actually destroying things that are in your clothes while you wear them. The other day, I saw one of those very rare things that you don't actually really see in real life, which is someone falling into the cam off
off
a punt.
Did they do the old pole stand where you sort of hover precariously on top of the pole, hoping for, you know, cartoon like embeddedness
and hoping that you just won't move or something?
It just slowly teeters over.
No, they did that second thing where they could see a collision coming to happen, and then they did that half-hearted stand down thing where you're either up on the back of the punt or you're in the safety of the punt, but they were half-hearted and thus already off balance, and so the collision happened and they went ooh, and it was, and I just remember this one kid screaming at the top of their voice, daddy, daddy, daddy. But anyway, that's not the potential scarring for life of this child is not actually what was amusing about this. Well, that's quite amusing in and of itself. What was actually amusing is afterward the poor daddy dragged himself back onto the punt. You saw him reach into his pocket and draw out this very bedraggled looking iPhone. And at that point, you realise that not only was he humiliated, not only was he going to have to spend all day in the rest of Cambridge in cam soaked clothing, but he'd also have to fill out an insurance claim saying that he'd took an unexpected swim in the cam with his iPhone.
Moving on to our third and final travel story now. This is about possibly one of the most epic taxi rides ever. A New York taxi driver, Mohammed Alam, picked up a fare of $5,000 to drive across the US to Los Angeles.
Now, this is quite exciting. So the idea behind this is that a particular investment banker, a guy called, John Belitsky, which sounds like the most made-up American name in the world, said he and his friend wanted to do something, quote, magical.
Surely that's go to, like, Disney World or something, traditionally.
Or would in general involve, like, Paul Daniels, you'd think.
Yeah.
And the lovely Debbie McGee.
Coins going through tables, or appearing to go through tables. Magical. Long car journey.
Not magical.
Not so much.
Possibly magical if you come from a pre-technological civilization, which doesn't have the concept of non-horse-drawn carriages. Then you have a sort of magic yellow box of wonder that can travel all the way across from one side of the US to the other. But if we assume that this investment banker understood the basics of the internal combustion engine, or that such a thing existed, it probably wasn't that magical to him. But anyway, they decided to get on a cab ride to LA as their magical thing. So they got into the nearest cab and, as one can do in New York City, said, "Drive me to LA." Now, there's more to this story, but what I was most amazed at is this only cost $5,000. Now, you think about how much it would cost to take two people to travel, say, first class to LA. On a plane.
Yeah, that probably beats first class air.
It probably does.
That's not too bad.
And you've got a cab driver who's you've effectively got a chauffeur taking you all the way from one side of the US to the other, and that's cheaper than flying there in two first class plane tickets.
Yeah. Actually, the cab driver seemed to do himself out of a great deal of money, because he said the New York news blog, NYU Local, has estimated that it would have cost about $17,000 had he just left the meter running rather than offering them this $5,000 deal.
But it doesn't say why he didn't leave the meter running. I mean, surely cab drivers are not known for their sort of natural outpouring of charity.
Well, there's also the fact that at that sort of figure, the meter will probably wrap. You'll probably end up at some point with the meter reading like negative $600 and sort of going, okay, who can remember how many times it's gone around?
Well, that's a good point.
If
you've only got sort of a certain number of digits on the meter and it'll just go wrap around, and go, oh, no. You have the sort of Y2K problem. Does anybody remember that from the dim, distant past?
Yeah, all of 11 years ago.
11 years is a long time, particularly to the student audience. I mean, how many generations of students is that? That's like three and a bit.
Yeah, good point. We've just had another email pointing out that it would be even more magical if you have no concept of domesticated transportation wildlife, which I think they mean horses.
Well, yes, they probably mean horses, but the PC term for it is domesticated transportation wildlife, or DTWs.
So
it's so that all wildlife has got equal opportunity to become domesticated and be used for transportation, not just horses.
We had there was a story about a cow being used as a show jumping cow recently.
And there you go, and that cow should have all the right in the world to be a transportation device if it so wishes. And I think it's possibly narrow-minded and in some sense offensive to say that only horses can be domesticated and use transportation. So that's why DTW has come the preferred.
But I think DTW is lacking a certain pragmatic air, because I mean, like a shrew, for example. I mean, riding a shrew from coast to coast, notoriously difficult. I think you'll find this is a quality that the people just don't want.
Hence the well-known saying, you can take a shrew to water, but you can't ride it across a channel.
Right, exactly. I mean, you might be able to ride like 100 shrews. That might work.
Well, chained together in some sort of...
Well, I was thinking as a sort of a horrible writhing carpet that was...
That would be awesome, actually. If I could, like, go to work on a writhing carpet of shrews, I think I would get respect. I'd probably get my own parking space, actually. Complete with a little sort of bed of hay and some nibbles for the shrews.
Well, we just had an email. What was this? YouTube says 126 million hits, much more than 60 million. I'm not sure what that was... Did we say 60 million? What did we say 60 million for?
I don't know. I don't think we mentioned YouTube at all.
I'm confused.
It's possible totally our confused. Correspondent is listening to a different radio station.
And just sending email to this show. Well, it does mention two of us by name.
Yeah, it's just saying that apparently only me and Rich are visible on the webcam, which is sad. Chris, you are sadly not. Well, you have been wiped from existence.
Formally, it just says that the webcam just shows you and I moving around in the studio. It could show Chris here... utterly static in the studio. Oh my good God, who the hell is that? There's a new guy just appeared in the studio.
But yes, getting back onto the actual news story, that they actually managed to go to Las Vegas on the way past. I'm assuming that they avoided the Grand Canyon along the way.
You'd assume so, yes.
Yeah, because they did actually make it. Where two people who were in the cab won $2,000, just making back a fair proportion of their trip costs.
Yeah. Does it say who in the cab? I mean, was one of them the cabbie? In which case, they're just going, "Ha ha! I've won $2,000. I'm going to switch the meter off."
No. The two who are actually taking the taxi journey.
So, how long does it take to travel by taxi across the across the entire continental US?
Because 6 days, apparently.
Okay.
I was expecting more than that.
That's not too bad.
Well, I suppose if you're paying for it on the meter, you don't want it to be that long. Or perhaps the cabby driver said, you know, do you want the scenic route, the fast route?
About 400 miles a day. So, yeah, I can see that. I can see that being...
In this case, the scenic route is probably the other way around the planet.
Which would be exciting.
Would be very exciting.
Especially if you retrofitted the cabby with sort of amphibious... controls and things.
The cabbie.
Yeah.
Just
well,
with gills onto him.
Absolutely.
He has to drag the cab while he's swimming.
Swimming away. You are paying the best part of $10,000, whatever it was. $5,000. Maybe it's not worth it for $5,000, actually.
Yeah. So, yeah. If you've been on any particularly exciting taxi rides that might be just one tiny percentage as magical as this one, or if you'd like to comment on any of the stories we've been talking about, you can get in touch with us, www.camfm.co.uk, and click on the web form, or email us directly, studio@camfm.co.uk. And we'll be back after this musical break.
97.2, camfm.co.uk.
On air and online, your Cam FM.
Welcome back to Burst of All. That was Mr. Brightside by The Killers. We're moving on to some... animal-related stories now. Oh, sorry, we've had an email for when we asked the audience if they'd had any exciting taxi rides, and someone has said, "During the World Cup final, I had a taxi driver suggest we do some looting while everyone was occupied."
Which is a brilliant thing, actually. Although, presumably, you would hope that the taxi driver would stop the meter when you're actually going looting. otherwise, there's a sort of... a double win for the taxi driver and nothing for you, really.
Are we using the taxi as a getaway vehicle here? I assume so.
Well, it would be a bit silly to not. You know, you have a good, perfect good taxi, and then you do the looting. You think, how are we going to get away? Perhaps we should hail a taxi. And you and the taxi driver get in, and so there's an infinite recursion of taxi-based looting.
Oh, and also it would mean that someone else had a good reason to actually shout, "Follow that cab," in real life, which is something that I'm sure many people desire. But yes, we talk about silly news stories, and we're now talking about wildlife. Starting with chimpanzees give birth, ... like human, ...
Now, when I first read this headline, which is again, chimpanzees gives birth, quote, like human, unquote, I was remarkably unsurprised, I must admit, because I'm not going to claim to be a botanist.
Botanist, or
even a biologist. Oh dear lord. Oh dear.
It's chimpanzees, not plants.
Not plants. Yes, that was the first thing I learned in biology. The second thing I learned was that they don't give birth with eggs, or by leaving little packets of sperm on the ocean floor, or various on the very other ways that people sort of mix their genetic thing together. I was fairly sure that chimpanzees, at a fundamental level, kind of gave birth pretty much like every other mammal, disregarding the platypus.
Yeah, but it turns out that this story is slightly more complicated than that. And
slightly more complicated than that can be summed up in a single headline. Who would have thought?
Yeah.
If only the news was full of tweets.
It says, newborn chimpanzees emerge from the birth canal facing away from the mother, which is apparently the same as in humans, and apparently this is something that people have failed to notice before.
Which is surprising, really, because you would have thought that in the great history of wildlife observation, especially in zoos, someone would have at some point seen a chimpanzee give birth. You would have thought there'd be a special episode of The Good Life.
What?
You know, where Tom and Barbara, they want to branch out from pigs and fowl, whatever. Tom brings home a chimpanzee. They're sort of hilarious. Margot complains, "Oh, Tom, you're bringing the house home." And then they find out that chimpanzees give birth in a similar way to humans. I'm sure that could be an episode of The Good Life. Had it gone on for a fourth series...
It would have to be kind of an educational special of The Good Life, I think, in which Tom sort of goes, "Now then, this has all been fun and games, but let's take a moment to learn about the reproductive system."
Absolutely. I mean, I would watch a sort of an educational video given by Tom Good in the style of The Good Life. I've watched one without Flisty Kennedy. that would be far more educational to some people. Anyway, back to chimpanzees.
Well, we basically covered all that chimpanzees have to
Chimpanzees, they give birth like humans. There we go.
Yeah, that is actually...
Presumably the mother chimpanzee is holding onto the father chimpanzee's hand, swearing, saying, you know, you're never going home with me ever again. That's it. I hate you. Why did you do this to me?
I think we're learning things about you, Rich, and your life experiences.
There's another chimpanzee going to the mother chimpanzee going, "Breathe, breathe, breathe."
I wanted a home birth.
The Jad chimpanzee's looking around trying to find room at the inn, but there's no room. You can tell that my education is based in a very narrow room, can't you?
So does this all indicate that it would be reasonable to say that chimpanzees do it human style? And if so, is that kinky?
Well, I would say that they probably do it like they do on the Discovery Channel.
Hey, song references.
Woohoo, yes.
Take that, 2002.
With the kids of the down with the kids of the early 21st century right there.
I managed to click on the wrong thing. Our next story, which is wildlife, is much smaller wildlife. Staff at an Indian bank have been blamed for allowing termites to eat their way through bank notes worth millions of rupees, or about £137,000.
So this is, in essence, that although they are rubber-proof, Indian bank vaults are not termite-proof, which just goes to show the...
Which means they're made of wood.
Presumably
the vault
so.
Is made of cedar.
Or Indian termites are just rock hard and they just eat through metal.
they're kept in a strong room rather than the safe. Is that like, as a strong man, it's a room that can lift...
Now,
many
actually,
more rooms. It's a room at the bottom of a skyscraper, a strong room, because it's holding up the entire
up the whole skyscraper. What this actually occurred to me here is that, in essence, they were blaming the bank staff for allowing these termites to eat this very valuable money, and then there was nothing you can do about it. Well, if they want my 2 pence, no pun intended, why don't we just start using termites engorged on money as a form of currency?
how do you distinguish them from termites engorged on anything else?
Well, I mean, surely there'll be some distinctive feature of a termite engorged on money, right? They'll have that whiff of banknotes about them.
The money would need to contain like a phosphorescent dye or something.
Exactly.
So you know how you run a 20 under the dark light, and it would be you'd dim the lights, and if the termites were glowing in the appropriate manner,
then you know they're legal tender.
You'd be able to forge tender by like feeding them radium.
And the great thing is that instead of having a bank account with interest, you just have a termite farm, and you literally breed money. Yeah.
I think this is why you two aren't economists.
What, because we solve all the problems in a practical manner?
Yeah.
And you've lost all the money, but no, you haven't. You've just transmuted it into termite form. It's effectively breaking it into smaller change. If you have notes as the main currency and then you have termites as like the piddling little small change, you're great, really. Yeah.
There's a brilliant bit in this news story talking about previous times this happened. In the incident at Bihar in 2008, a trader lost his life savings after termites infested his bank's safe deposit boxes and ate them up. But the best bit is, the bank said that at the time they had to put up a notice warning customers of the termites.
They could say, warning termites. Yes, termites, keep out.
But presumably, like all things, you could take out insurance against this. I mean, if you know that termites are a non-trivial risk, you can take out an insurance policy. I'd just like to see Churchill going, you know, insure against termites. Oh, yes.
So,
and then you can have insurance fraud by, you know, deliberately walking into a bank with a termite and go, la, 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 just dropping it on the desk and walking away. Perfect crime. 6 months later, infested with termites, collect your money.
Oh. So, speaking of the perfect crime, how certain are we of the veracity of this as a thing that actually happened?
Well,
as opposed to there just being some employee at an Indian bank with enormous bulging trousers going, termites.
Well, you yourself said that all stories on the internet are false, and this is a story on the internet, and so using the unified crisp law of truth, this is a false story.
What was it unified with?
Well, it's unified with my truth theorem, which is that if it's not on the internet but on the BBC, it may or may not be true.
So my blog post about my own unified truth theorem is... That's a problem, isn't it?
Now, we've had a wonderful email from a listener on the website, a listener called Dave. Hello, Dave. And they've said that by doing a quick calculation, a taxi full of termites is itself worth about $5,000, which, as he points out, is all a sort of wonderful connected whole.
Dave, they're proving the interconnectedness of all things.
Exactly, a very holistic approach right there. Which means that, in actual fact, if you filled your taxi full of termites and drove it full into a bank, there would be no net change in money. That's one of those wonderful sort of physics theorems.
Are you saying that the damage caused by a taxi hitting a bank is exactly equal to the value of the volume of the taxi? And is this true of all modes of transport?
It's a fundamental physical concept.
If I fill an ocean liner with termites then drive that into the coast of Norfolk, have I done the same amount of
damage to Norfolk? It's the only dispassionate way to work out whether a form of wildlife can be domesticated in transportation. If you feed it banknotes until it's engorged and run it into a bank, if the damage exactly cancels out, it's a viable form of transportation. That's why shrews don't work, because shrews have got very small stomachs.
Yeah.
They can't eat that many banknotes, but horses can eat loads of banknotes. They've got special stomachs for it.
Yeah, so if you did this with like a golden eagle, you'd find that actually goes the other way, because the golden eagle would be full of banknotes, but it'd just go whap against the window, and that only costs you like some Windex to clean up the window, and you've got quite a lot of money, because the golden eagle is pretty hefty.
Exactly.
So that would be an economic, like it would be a positive curve on the economy.
Is that why it's called a golden eagle?
Yeah. Yeah. Rather than silver eagles or bronze eagles.
Although it is eating banknotes.
Yeah, but
we might have to get another variety of this where they eat like shavings of pound coins.
Surely somewhere they're still on the gold standard, right?
No, it just says I promise to give the bearer on demand. It doesn't say I promise to transmute on demand into this amount of gold.
No, that would
be brilliant if you actually had a banknote, which is like those things you put it in water and they turn into T-shirts. You put a banknote in water, it turns into a load of gold. Vumpf.
Yeah. And become so you've got to decide when, oh, do I want to put it in the water yet? It will become harder to transport.
Which leads me to my favourite factoid, actually, which is if you take a gherkin, you know they're pickled cucumbers, take a gherkin, put it in a bowl of water, it rehydrates into a cucumber.
I'm not sure I believe that.
Well, go home and try it tonight. I encourage everyone to go home and try it. Take a gherkin, put it in a bowl of water. You'll see. I've got photographic evidence.
Yeah. If you bathe it in guacamole, it actually turns into a courgette.
Exactly. In fact, you know,
you can get a marrow somehow, but I've yet to find the intermediate resource.
It's like that game on phones, you know, alchemy. You know that courgette that gherkin plus water equals
cucumber.
You know that gherkin plus guacamole equals courgette. And you're sitting there, you've managed to make man and alcohol and vodka, but you haven't managed to make a marrow just yet.
I figure it's probably a turnip divided by probably a gherkin.
Yes.
But it's like... taking quotients of vegetables is
integrated
over
the space
of really difficult.
It is. It's one of those things which is almost guaranteed to be empirical.
Do you know the gherkin is an irrational vegetable?
It is. It can't be expressed as a ratio of two any other rational vegetables. That's the definition. Just try it. Try it at home. You can't do it.
Moving on, we've got a collection of other stories to talk about briefly before the end of the show. Armenia is making chess compulsory in schools.
Which is good, because really, I mean, chess needs to be educated, just like everybody else. Aha, you see, that's one of those hilarious misunderstandings.
But the BBC therefore asks the question, should every child be made to play chess?
Yeah, this is going to be Wareham's unified rule of BBC headline writing, right? You take something which has happened in some country somewhere in the world for a very small section of people, and then you say, should X happen globally, and have a little comments thing. And you can guarantee that the great British public will fill this comments thing full of sort of like, well, yes, absolutely, when I was a child, I was forced to do X all the time, 20 times a day, did me no harm. Or you have all liberals saying, oh, no, X is awful, it stifles creativity. Yes. And then you basically got a story and writes itself.
Discriminates against people who are bad at chess.
Exactly. For all X.
Well, but there's a brilliant bit in this news story. Someone has made a submission to the government's National Curriculum Review, and it recommended that one class of chess or other thinking games like bingo is made mandatory every week for children in years 2 and 3. Now, chess... okay. Thinking game, you've got to plan ahead, you've got to try and work out what your opponent's going to do. Bingo, you listen for a number, when the number is called out, you cross it off. I'm not sure the two are actually comparable.
Well, I'm going to ask you this, right? There's a computer that can play Jeopardy. There's a computer that can play chess. It beat Garry Kasparov in 1997. But has IBM yet made a computer that can play bingo? I've not heard of this. So therefore, it must be a harder problem.
I heard there was a computer which was thought to be able to play bingo, but on closer inspection it was switched off. So the jury's still out.
The jury's still out on this matter, yes.
It did as well as the other contestants. So.
Another wonderful quote is, chess draws from brain power, not experience. So I would like to test this. I would like to put someone who's good at thinking but has never played chess before against a chess grandmaster who
has been hit around the head sufficiently hard that they can no longer think.
That would be a brilliant match, actually.
That would actually super. Like a child genius who knows nothing of chess versus Garry Kasparov after he's been beaten up.
I think this would be a valid test hypothesis.
It sounds like science to me.
There is a real sport which is nearly that. Chess boxing, where you alternate rounds of boxing and is it minutes of chess or something like that?
Something like
that.
You
don't play a whole game of chess. The point is that during the boxing you try to pummel your opponent so that their frontal lobe doesn't work anymore. and then you best them at chess.
And so the question is, are you at a better advantage if you're very experienced at boxing and potentially not very experienced at thinking, or vice versa?
Right. I'm not sure actually how you win. You know, like, do you win by knockout or checkmate? One of them required?
I think one of them is required. It's either, I believe.
Because frankly, if you knocked your opponent out, but you were still playing chess with them, then it's not going to work, is it?
You could just wait until the clock went down to zero.
Exactly. You're just sitting there.
I think it's a bit unfair, actually, because being good at the boxing, obviously, if people are dazed after the boxing, gives you advantage at the chess. But being good at the chess, I don't think, gives you an advantage at the boxing. You're not going to get people going, I can't, that move, it's blown my mind, I can't punch anymore.
Well, yeah, I mean, what if you set them a real puzzler? There's a terrible risk that they'll get distracted, that they'll be sort of sat there going, oh, hang on, knight to e6, ah!
But,
that very rarely happens. Very few people have ever thought the phrase knight to e6 --arg. That guy who drove into the Grand Canyon had a similar experience.
Well, yeah, he was playing chess on his phone at the same time.
There's the explanation. He was thinking about a chess problem.
So we can now be in a position to exclusively answer the BBC's question, should all children be taught to play chess? No, because they'll drive into the Grand Canyon when they're older.
Also, we can cut that little bit out of this podcast and move it back in time to when we were talking about the Grand Canyon crash.
But then you'll have turned like a moderately funny callback into an only slightly less funny thing at the time. This will be, if anything, slightly degrading the podcast.
Oh, the paradox of comedy.
God, for the powers of live radio to suppress your time-manipulating powers.
But getting back to the chess article, an English grandmaster who here said that chess is a very addictive process, a positive drug for children.
Well, when we get them on those positive drugs, it cancels out all those negative drugs. Like ITV.
I'm just find that the phrasing of that just slightly bizarre and creepy.
We should maybe, well, if we're going to do that, we should try and find other things which are both addictive and positive. The sort of cross,
like Minecraft.
Yeah, right. Yeah, exactly. Like we need some sort of cross between an academic subject and a drug, like a Rhythmo Smack. That'll be all right.
Sudoku Fu.
Hang on, which is the are you suggesting that Kung Fu is addictive? Because what you've done there is you've crossed Kung Fu with Sudoku, one of which is a thing they should be learning, and the other of which is also a thing. You've misunderstood the premise here, Warren.
Oh no.
There we go. That's should people play chess? No, but we should find more good addictive things. Moving on, we're going to talk about this is possibly unique among shows at the moment. We're going to talk about a royal, but not in a matrimonial sense. So Prince Harry has hinted he would like to be involved in a charity expedition to climb Mount Everest.
Although, yet again, using my Wareham's law of misinterpreting the BBC headlines, I've originally read this as, or it says, Prince Harry hints he might climb Everest for charity. And I was sitting there going, isn't this girlfriend Chelsea? Rather than charity. But anyway, that's enough for me. Now I'm actually reading the story. This makes a lot more sense, particularly because I have a photo of Prince Harry looking cold.
That's what you need for all stories.
Well, that's what you need to do to differentiate between a woman called Charity and the concept of climbing Everest because it's hard and you need to raise money for poor kids. You need a picture of someone looking cold and suffering, because you are never cold and you're never suffering with your girlfriend.
Isn't climbing Everest quite expensive itself?
Yeah, he's like, Prince Harry, he can afford it.
I mean, it just seems like a better charitable gesture would be to collect all the donations and stuff and then just knock off for 2 weeks in the Caribbean and then sort of go, yeah, we climbed Everest, totally.
You mean do it all
check
on a green screen?
Polar bear that I brought back with me.
Polar bear?
Yep. Which was also climbing Everest for charity. In fact, there was a different charity to try and force a polar bear up Everest, a large pointy stick.
Well, people do kind of like marathons in rhino costumes and stuff, so perhaps...
So you're suggesting that we go to the London Marathon, take some poor chap running the London Marathon in polar bear costume, say, you're already wrapped up warm, why don't you go up Everest? Prod, prod, prod with a sharp stick.
Well, why not?
Yes, well, why not? It's for charity, after all. There's nothing wrong with abusing someone in a bear skin. Oh my good grief. Sorry, I've just read this this quote. Was it from Harry? Yes.
Yeah.
He was sharing a tent with someone during a previous expedition somewhere.
Yeah, someone was on an expedition to North Pole.
And he said, and Prince Harry said, and I'm quoting verbatim, I spent 4 days with him in his pleasure dome. It was truly an amazing experience.
And I didn't know. You missed out. You have missed out. That's not verbatim. You've missed out a crucial, crucial step.
I can see no crucial step.
I'm sure anyone...
You mean the bit where it says, I don't think there's anyone that could possibly have done the job better than him. Again, I'm quoting.
Oh, dear.
So there we go. We're hoping we're not going to get people knocking on the door of the radio studio now.
But I'm fairly sure Prince Harry is not listening.
No. But sadly, that is, in fact, all we've got time for.
Mm-hmm.
So thank you, everyone, for listening. And
thank you very much for emailing as well.
Yeah, we've had loads of emails. Keep it up. That was brilliant. And if you'd like to carry on emailing us, you can do that over the week on our page on the CamFM website. So thank you all very much. We'll be back next week with a new selection of new random news. I've been Michael Quintario.
I've been Chris Moten.
And I have been and will continue to be Rich Wareham.
Thank you, and have a good evening.